Good morning. Good morning, Four Points. How are y'all? Oh, that was weak. Man, it's gonna be a tough go this morning. Man, I get better responses out of middle school boys than I get out of y'all. Woo! Yeah, Michael, scan that. It's fine. This morning, we're gonna continue our Lost and Found series that we started last week. Pastor Russ kind of set this up this week as kind of a testimonial week. And we'll get to that at the end, because I don't want this morning to become a biography of, well, this is Joe. I don't want that to happen. I want to lead with Jesus and end with Jesus. I want that to be what this is this morning. But I wanted to start with this. We see and we know that in the world right now we have a massive craving for something more than this world. We fill our hearts with all these things, right? We've heard preachers get up here and go, well, you know, there's a God-sized hole in your heart and you're filling it with a bunch of stuff. We know that, right? Because we have this hunger, and you know, we feel this yearning. But often we can't quite put our finger on what it is, on what I'm really looking for. You know, I get up in the middle of the night and I open the fridge and I'm like, I'm hungry, but I don't know what I want, and there's nothing in here that I really want. And then I go wake Kelsey up and I'm like, hey, where's the ice cream at? She's like, it's in the freezer. What are you doing, man? Like, leave me alone. And I'm like, I don't want that kind, no way. And then she's just mad at me, and it's fine. But that's what I do. Sorry, I had to let you into my life there for a second. That's what I do. So what does the good news, the gospel, have to do with those seeking after something deeper in this world? I think if we look at it, life is a journey between two points, being lost and being found. These words, lost and found, they pop up all throughout Scripture. And we love, that's kind of part of our profession. We love to talk about lost and found from the stage. We love to talk about it. That's our favorite words up here. You know, our favorite songs even echo these words, you know, like in Amazing Grace. You know, I once was lost, but now I am found. I'm found. These words, they hold a lot of weight. They hold a lot of weight in our kind of Christian vocabulary. So let's dive into these words today, and let's see how they shape our lives. You know, because in a way, the church teaches that almost being lost is part of the human experience. Ever since Adam and Eve took that kind of wrong turn in the garden, you know, when they're pointing fingers at everybody and saying, well, it's her fault, no, it was his fault, and all that fun stuff. Y'all don't do that, right? Okay, the ones that laughed know what I'm talking about. The ones that didn't laugh, their toes hurt, and it's fine. So it's fine. I got to laugh over here. That was good. From then on, you know, the story of grace becomes the tale of God's unwavering pursuit of his lost and wandering children. You know, lostness wears many masks. It wears many masks. And it leads us down detours in life. You know, the truth is we're all a bit lost. We're all a bit lost. And because the Bible, Scripture, is full of stories of people who were lost and then found. They were lost and then found. You know, if we look back and we try to remember the children of Israel, they were lost in the chaos of Egypt until God rescued them. Moses himself was a fugitive, you know, lost in the Midian desert and before God showed up. Even after they were freed, the Israelites wandered in the wilderness for how many years? 40 years, like a long time. Moses, you know, frankly, could have probably used a GPS rather than a staff, but, you know, that's just, you know, second Joe opinions, whatever. Their ticket into the promised land, what was it? It was a kind-hearted yet lost woman named Rahab to help them out. You know, ironically, even in the promised land, God's people found themselves lost at times. Exile after exile, Israel spent more time lost than they spent found. So what does it really mean to be lost? What does it really mean to be lost? And better yet, what does it mean to be found? You know, that's a better question, I believe. Because being lost can be a choice, sure. But most of the time, it's kind of just part of this human condition that we have. We don't set out to lose our way. We don't set out to lose our way, but somehow we find ourselves off course. Like, we wake up and go, how did I get here? I don't remember like setting out years and years ago to get here. You know, it often starts with thinking we've got it all figured out. You know, I've got it all figured out. You know, me, lost, ain't no way. You know, none of us like admitting we're lost in the long run, whether it's lost on the road or lost in kind of the labyrinth of a mall parking lot or, you know, whatever. How many of y'all been lost in the parking lot? And okay, some of y'all know what I'm talking about. Some of y'all know what I'm talking about. And men in the room, y'all don't never get lost when y'all be driving, right? See? Now y'all talking to me. Now I feel like we got some middle school boys in the room. So, I know. I put that in there because, you know, my wife's like, you know, you can't remember anything, but you can remember how to get from point A to point B. And I'm like, you know how many brain cells that takes? And I don't have many to spare. So, like, I have to dedicate it to, like, point A to point B. Everything in between, I don't know what happened. But we here, so don't be mad. So, did you die, though? That's my question. That's my question. Once again, I'm letting y'all in to my life. So none of us like admitting we're lost. And, you know, no matter where we tend to be lost at, you know, whether it's that mall, we're just wandering around trying to find our car. But I think physical lostness is just the tip of the iceberg. It's just the tip of the iceberg for us. We get lost in relationships. We get lost in our careers. We get lost in the chaos of life when things don't go our way. And we go, God, where are you? I thought I was walking with you. But where are you in this season? Because God, I didn't see that coming. I didn't see that coming. Well, God, I thought they were the one for me. I'll let that rest. Middle school. I'm just kidding. So, I thought they were the one for me. Well, God, I thought I was called to work here. I really thought my kids needed 3,200 weeks of travel baseball. Okay. I really thought they needed that. I really thought that Christmas and Easter at church was okay. I'm gonna move on before I get in trouble. I really thought it was okay, but I get lost in this chaos of life, of things happening, and we get lost in our faith. We get lost in our doubts and our anxiety, and we have all these things set in, and we go, God, I thought I was with you. I thought I was walking with you. But now I wake up one morning, I go, God, I don't know. I feel lost. And we're just trying to find ourselves. We get lost in our fears because we all have them. We all have fears, whether we want to admit it or not. You know, for the males in the room, this is oftentimes harder for us because we want to wake up, beat our chest, grill and get like meat stuff all over us and like have it all together. I know that's what y'all do. You don't have to lie. But it's difficult for us to go, I don't have it all together. I feel lost in this season. And I'm scared. I'm scared. I have this fear that I'm not going to be good enough. I'm not going to be who God's called me to be. That I'm not going to be able to lead my family well. That I'm not going to be the husband that God called me to be. That I'm not going to be the father that God's called me to be. We have these fears that set in. And sometimes we find ourselves lost in ways that we don't even have names for yet. Like, we're just creating ways to be lost because we're unique. We're unique. So what does it mean to be lost? You know, sometimes life backs us into a corner. It strips away our options. It delivers a tough diagnosis that we didn't want. that we didn't see coming, or it derails our plans. It's in these moments that we often find ourselves lost. You know, lostness has this way of showing us how desperately we need to be found. It humbles us. In this world, lostness is just one tragedy away. And when we're lost, who do we turn to? Who do you turn to when you wake up one morning and go, I don't know how I got here. I don't know how I got here. Who do you turn to? Who can find us when we're wandering off the path that God has set out for us? Who do we turn to? So what does it mean to be found? Well, we're going to talk about the pursuing God. We see in the book of Luke, we're going to Luke 15. We're going to kind of skip around through Luke 15, but basically it's all about lost things. Luke 15 is all about lost things. We're going to start in 15, verse 8. It starts with the parable about a woman who loses a coin. Luke 15, verse 8. Or suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Doesn't she light a lamp, sweep the house, search carefully until she finds it? And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together and says, rejoice with me, I have found my lost coin. In the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents, over one person who repents, over you and over me. There is rejoicing. But we see this woman, she can't rest until she's turned her whole house upside down. It's not as if she's lost her glasses or her wallet. It's just one coin. That coin couldn't find its way back to her, so she made it her mission to go and find it. She made it her mission to go and find it. And then we see there's this guy who owns some sheep in Luke 15:4. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Doesn't he leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, rejoice with me. I have found my lost sheep. I tell you that in the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. You know, one of them goes rogue, so he hits the road to find it. I mean, you can't expect a sheep to navigate its way home, you know. So he leaves the 99 and goes on a rescue mission because sheep are dumb. They put their head down, they eat grass, and they just keep eating grass, and they just keep eating grass, and then they look up and go, dang, where's the shepherd? Is that not what we do in our life? We put our head down, we pull up our bootstraps, and we hit it head on. And then years and years down the road, we go, where's the shepherd? Where is he? Well, I had my head down for so long, just going at it, just trucking away at my career, at that relationship that I probably wasn't meant to be in anyway, at that friend group I knew I shouldn't have been around anyway, at that one thing that I knew I shouldn't have been going towards anyway. And then I look up 10 years down the road and go, God, where are you at? Where are you at? But we serve a pursuing God, a God that chases us, that pursues us. So one of the sheep goes rogue, and he leaves the other 99 and goes on a rescue mission. You know, some might think he's being greedy. You might think he's being greedy, risking so much for just one sheep. And it sounds greedy until you're that one sheep. It sounds greedy until the one sheep is you. And for most of us, we put ourselves in the 99 and we don't take the time to realize at one point in time we were the one sheep. We were the one sheep. And we go, well, I just don't understand why he would waste so much time and effort to leave us and go chase them. We get our theology mixed up. We go, it's an us versus them. No, it's all of us together that the Father is chasing. It's all of us together. Even those people that don't look like you, don't sound like you, he's still pursuing them. So it's not a 99 versus a one. It's a we all in this together, that and we have a shepherd that is shepherding us and looking after us and keeping us safe from the wolves. And when one goes rogue, when one goes to the far off place, a good shepherd will chase that one. And at one point in time, that one was you. And that one was me. So it's not greedy. It's he's being gracious. He's being gracious to take care of that one sheep. So he's risking so much. But maybe, you know, in the story, maybe the shepherd, he's more than an owner. Maybe he's a caretaker who loves each sheep like family. And when he finally finds that lost sheep, it's not just a possession he's recovered. It's like he's welcoming back a beloved member of the family. Then we get to the end of Luke 15. And Jesus, he tells us a story about a young man who leaves home seeking freedom. We call this the prodigal son. Y'all have heard this before, the prodigal son. Starting in verse 11 of Luke 15, this is a lot, so stick with me. Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one would give him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I'm starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and went to his father. Well, while he was still a long ways off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. When he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on, 'Your brother has come,' he replied, 'and your father has killed the fattened calf, because he has come home safe and sound.' The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, 'Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when the son of yours who has squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him.' 'My son,' the father said, 'you are always with me and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.'" We see in this scripture that We have the prodigal son, the one that went to the far-off place, the one that just wanted the riches from his father, wanted his inheritance. And then we see him go off into Woodruff and... Okay, y'all still with me. I just had to check. So he had to go off into Woodruff and spend it all down at Tap 3 in Woodruff. And, you know, and that's just what he did. If you're from Woodruff, you know, everything's fine. Or Tracy's place down the road. Who knows? So he went off and he squandered his father's inheritance that he begged his father for. And the son was envious of the food that the pigs were eating. It was like, man, like I thought this freedom that I was going to have, I thought this freedom that I was going to have was going to be so much better than being with my Father. I thought freedom was going to be better than being in His presence. I thought this freedom was going to be better than being in His presence. And we see he hits rock bottom. He hits rock bottom. And we see him come to this realization of, well, this ain't it. How did I get here? How did I get here? I was at my Father's house, and then I chose to be out here, and I'm having to sleep with the pigs and eat with the pigs, and this just ain't it. This just ain't it. You know, I'll go back to my Father's house, and I'll apologize, and I'll say, you know, God, Father, I've wronged you. I've wronged you. We see him kind of come to his senses and make this decision. You know, the prodigal son, you know, realizes that freedom can feel a lot like being alone. Freedom can feel a lot like being alone. And wide open spaces can quickly become a wilderness of lostness. Wide open spaces can quickly become a wilderness of lostness. After hitting rock bottoms, eating with pigs, he decides it's time to go back home. You know, here's a case where someone played a role in their own rescue. He had to own up to his mistakes, stop blaming others, and accept his lostness. Because you see, we can't be found until we admit we're actually lost. We can't be found until we admit, like, I am lost. I'm lost spiritually. I'm lost in my job. I'm lost in this relationship. I'm lost in whatever it is. And I need to be found. But even his journey back home would have been pointless if there wasn't a loving Father waiting at the end of the driveway. We see that as the son's coming home, it says that the Father sees him way off. The Father sees him way off. That leads me to believe that the Father was waiting by the window looking for his son to return. He was waiting. He was waiting. And it says that he sent for the fattened calf. Well, the fattened calf didn't happen overnight. There was preparations happening to fatten that calf up. Why? Because he knew his son was coming home. He knew his son was coming home. And so he sent for this fattened calf. But it doesn't make sense if there's not a father waiting for us. This father was ready to find his son, but the son had to be ready to be found. The moment the son turned back, ready to face his consequences, the father was there with open arms. And I tell you this, to use the last, I don't know, 10, 11 minutes, to tell you a story. And like I said, this we picked these songs specifically, and Pastor Russ kind of set up last week specifically for kind of this moment right here. Our vision is to create a place where it's impossible to be unknown. It's impossible to be unknown. And frankly, that starts here. It starts here. So I didn't necessarily introduce myself when I first got up here. I'm Joe, I'm Pastor Joe. I'm the student pastor here at Four Points, amongst other things. If I had like the little name tag, it's just like rolling. That's just how ministry works. But that resume doesn't tell the full story. It doesn't tell the full story. And I could leave you with that and you'd be like, okay, well, that was weird and he gave us a resume and whatever. But that doesn't tell the full story. Because you see, Easter at Four Points, we're 2 weeks away. It holds a special place in my heart. You see, in 2016, I sat, let's see, probably five rows back in that empty chair right there on Easter as a full-blown addict. I've been in recovery for 8 years now. I know some of you are like elbowing your wife going, I know he was too skinny. That delivered. That was good. I just had to break that because I felt like we were getting in there. But yeah, I walked in here 2016, Easter Sunday, sat 5 rows back on the end as a full-blown addict. It wasn't good. It wasn't good. But I think we need some setup to that story. You see, I came from a broken home. My dad was a abusive alcoholic, and it was bad. It was bad. So I live with my grandparents like 99% of the time. And they're like the, you know, old school Baptist, like we're going to the church every time the doors thought about opening. We were there like waiting outside. You know, they were like unlocking just so we could get in there, that type of deal. And the idea of a loving, gracious, kind father was always appealing to me. It was always appealing to me because I didn't have that on this side of heaven. I didn't have that on this side of heaven. And I got in my head that I thought my grandparents' faith was enough. Well, I'll just go with them because they believe, and this is enough. I'll get by because what they got is enough. Not realizing that it's not. Not realizing that I needed my own faith. It wasn't until I went to a summer camp that the Lord grabbed a hold of me. And I stepped into a relationship with Him. That is the moment. That is the moment. I remember it vividly. Like, that's the moment I went from death to life. That's why, like, we believe in summer camp. Here's why, right? And I knew at that moment that there was a call to ministry, even at a young age. And so I really leaned into the Lord, and I was learning, you know, kind of all that I could, you know, kind of as a teenager. I was probably 14 when they let me stand up behind a pulpit. Poor decision on their part. I'm just saying, like, but that's a big deal. Like, we was in a Southern Baptist church, and it was rough. It was touch and go. But I didn't have all the tattoos then, so they let me do it. So I'm just throwing that out there. That's funny to some people. Some people it's not going to be here for Easter. At 14, I stood there. I shouldn't have been there, you know, standing behind the pulpit, but I knew there was a call on my life. I knew there was a call, and I'd really leaned into that for a lot of my teenage years, and then a shift happened in my life, a shift that I didn't see coming. My life got kind of turned upside down. I recently got engaged to my beautiful wife, Kelsey, and I was confronted with a difficult situation that, you know, we had to walk through. Through that, you know, that situation, I walked away from church and I walked away from His people. I questioned a lot of things, and I kind of used like this overly big church, you know, word that we love to use. It's called church hurt. Not that it doesn't exist, but I got really good at using Christianese. Y'all know Christianese? I got really good at using Christianese to demean His people. I got really good at using Christianese to condemn His people. And I used church hurt as the reason for me leaving the church and His people. But really in my head, I had just forgotten that we're all broken people living in a broken world. And I put blame and put myself on this pedestal where I'm like, well, I would have never done that. That's a dangerous place to be, boys and girls. I would have never done that. And the Lord said, oh, really? Oh, really? So I used church hurt as a reason for me to say, well, I just want some freedom. I just want some freedom because, God, I just don't feel like Your way worked. Because if Your way worked, why did that happen to us? Why did you make me and my wife or fiance at that time walk through that? Why did you do that? Why did you let those people do that? And so I used church hurt as an excuse for me just to walk away, to go to the far-off place. That's why Luke 15, the prodigal son, really hits home for me and my family, because I was there, in every sense of the word. I can walk through verse by verse and go, okay, well, this is Joe at 15. This is Joe at 20. You know, I can walk through line by line and say, okay, well, this is where I was. Not knowing that's where I was in the middle of it. So I'm operating out of church hurt, and you know, I'm using this as my Christianese excuse to not be around his people. I didn't attend church for years and years and years. And at some point, I had become the God of my life. And I said, God, well, your way's not working. Father, your way's not working. So I'm gonna do it my way instead. And I was on this kind of like weird religious pedestal where I said, well, God, I know you called me to that, but like if you called me to that, you shouldn't have sent them my way. You shouldn't have done that. So I get married at 20. And shortly after that is really when my years of addiction kind of kicked in and started. I took something that was, we'll say, permissible but not profitable. I took that and turned it into my identity. I took that and it became who I was. It took up my whole life. It took over my family. It took over my job. It took over everything that I thought I had. It became who Joe was. Because I was trying to fill this God-sized hole with anything, and I just happened to land on that. So I was an addict for quite a few years, you know, running from God and the call on my life. I was watching my family fall to pieces before my eyes. I felt like Jeremiah in I think it's Lamentations 3, where he's on the hill and he's looking down at Jerusalem and it's on fire and there is nothing he can do about it. And that's how I felt, taking inventory of my life, going, God, I thought you were in this. What happened? And God says, nah, homie. That's how me and God talk. He was like, nah, homie, you wanted freedom. You wanted freedom. You didn't want the Father. You wanted freedom. You didn't want the Father. So I sit back on this imaginary hilltop in my mind, and I'm seeing just my world crash and burn. And I'm going, how did I get here? How did I get here? You know, and during this whole process of me absolutely running from God, and frankly, everyone else, because in that period of time, you said, if you would have asked me, like, who are the people closest to you? I'd be like, me, myself, and I don't know. I don't have anybody around me because I want to run from everybody because I'm scared that they're going to see who I really am. I'm scared they're going to see who I really am. As I'm wasting my time, I'm not at home, I'm wasting my paycheck on things I shouldn't have been wasting my paycheck on. But during this whole process of me just running and running and running, people at Four Points had been praying for my family. You had been praying for my family. And there had been like this time where Four Points had been praying specifically for my wife and had been there for her during what was a very difficult season for us. And so Four Points was there for her during that time. And, you know, they had been inviting her to come. Like, hey, if you just come and sit, like, you can leave his lazy butt at home and, you know, whatever. Like, just come and check it out. So Easter 2016 rolls around. I'd been out all night the night before. We were on our way home, probably 3-4 o'clock in the morning. We hit a deer, couldn't stop, because we all had some little issues going on, so we couldn't stop. We totaled the truck, it's jacked up. We get to my house, it's Easter Sunday morning. During that whole process, I had, you know, forgotten that I had made a promise to my wife to become a CEO. You know what a CEO is? Christmas and Easter only. Like, I'd forgotten, y'all like that. I'd forgotten that I'd made that promise to my wife to go to church with her that morning. So running on fumes, both physically and spiritually, drove us to Four Points, which, looking back, it's probably not the best option, but I drove us to Four Points. I pulled up in the parking lot out there, and I ran over the curb. I'll be honest. Hey, we don't want to be, this is a place where we're where we can be known. So I hit the sidewalk in front of the building. We walk in, we sat right there. I couldn't tell you exactly what was necessarily preached that Sunday morning, but I remember sitting there hearing God say, "It's time to come home. It's time to come home." I remember every person that stopped me from that seat till I got back in my car. They stopped me that day and told me that they'd been praying for me, that they'd been praying for my wife, that they'd been praying for my son, who was a newborn then. They'd been praying for us, that they had been praying for me specifically, that the Lord would intervene and that He would call me from a far off place and welcome me back home as a son of the Most High God. So I sat right there and heard the Father say, "Come home. It's time. Stop waiting. Stop waiting. Stop putting it off. It's time to come home." The church, your invite is important. Why? Because your invite is the reason I stand here today. Your invite is the reason that my wife sits there today. Your invite is important. Your prayers for people are important. Because I could have easily walked in here, plop, prayed, and paid, and left. Some people thought that was funny. But between that seat and my car seat, you stopped me and you said, I've been praying for you. I've been praying for you. So your prayers are important. I found myself very, very lost in that season, tending a grave that I was not called to tend anymore. And the Father welcomed me back home in this very room. So church, I wanted to wrap up with the prodigal son because it aligns with a lot of what God has done in my life. But I don't want to be blind to the fact that I think and I know that the story of the prodigal son and the story of addiction is in the room. It's in the room. And I don't want to hide from it this morning, because I know there's some wives, there's some husbands, there's some moms, there's some dads that have seen their sons, that have seen their daughters run to the far-off place of addiction. You've seen them run. You've seen them run. My encouragement for you this morning is, let's bring them to the Father's feet. Let's bring them to the Father's feet. Why? Because God is still good and God still works miracles in 2024, just as He did 2,000 years ago. He does. And I have confidence in that because He worked right there in that seat on me. And I know there's the other side. There's the people that in the room that are actively involved in some type of addiction. It doesn't have to be mine. But guys, look how far the Lord has already brought you this morning. Look how far He's already brought you. Don't walk out of here addicted to anything besides the Father's presence. There is nothing holding you in that seat. We don't have some kind of weird religious super glue that's holding your feet on this floor. That'd be a cool idea, but we don't have it. So my encouragement for you this morning is that in that struggle, in that season of lostness, in that season of addiction, that we stop running. That we stop running. Our prayer team is going to be here. We would love to pray for you and to pray with you. Because guys, we know that God is good. And like I said, He works miracles. And we would love if you allowed Him to work in your life today so that restoration can happen in your life, so that you could come into relationship with Him this morning. There's nothing stopping you besides you. So let's move as the Father leads.